Welcome to the Crisis Vote, a half hour on a global election crisis. A loud blast near the hotel of journalist Dar Jamail turned out to be one of several car bombs that exploded near a bank, police headquarters, and the Australian embassy. Jamail joins us for another update today, Wednesday, the 19th of January, as the election in Iraq approaches January 30th. The area around the Green Zone is once again the intended target, as are staff in the offices of candidates in the upcoming election. Many Iraqis favor postponing the January elections, according to our guest today. He spent months documenting the death and destruction caused by the war and during the occupation. Iraqis are facing extremes of violence, he says, made worse by the fact that they have so little information about what they must do on January 30th to vote. We spoke first about the increasing violence.
The day started at 7:05 a.m. was the first in a series of five coordinated suicide car bomb attacks. The first detonated into, it's right near the Australian, just across the street from my hotel is an Australian military outpost in this large building that's used to protect the embassy, and that's what was hacked. It injured just two Australian soldiers, but it killed two Iraqi civilians who were on the street when the blast occurred. It caused some minor structural damage to the building the Australians used and blasted out glass in all of the surrounding hotels, including my own. It was a powerful enough blast that actually chunks of the ceiling fell down in my room and in my hall, and I ran outside and into the roof to see what had happened, and it was a giant car bomb blast. And then less than 30 minutes after that, another car bomb struck, and then three more shortly after that. Among the targets were a bank that where Iraqi police were going to collect their salaries, and 10 police were in that blast. Another one attacked a Iraqi police headquarters here in Baghdad, and that killed several police and civilians. On the airport, a car bomb detonated there that killed two Iraqi security guards and two civilians, and then another car bomb struck a military base that killed two U.S. soldiers and two more civilians.
There has been a targeting of candidates, it seems. Can you talk a little bit about that, any developments there?
While candidates themselves have not been the targets of assassinations, primarily because their names have not been released and will not be released prior to the upcoming election, but it is political aides. For example, several aides of Grand Ayatollah Sistani have been assassinated, as well as members of their family, and attacks on political offices. Yesterday, the office of one of the lead Shia political parties in Baghdad was car-bombed. Offices of Ayed Alawi have been car-bombed. Offices of Ahmed Chalabi have been car-bombed. So these have become a daily occurrence, as well as the assassinations.
How are Iraqis getting their news and information about the election?
Most Iraqis are getting their news by televisions. Most have satellite dishes, and there are several Arab media channels broadcast that do give updates on what's happening regarding the elections and what they are supposed to do. There are many newspapers here as well in Baghdad, so between the two of those, that's how they're getting their news. But it's volatile situation. It's very difficult for people to keep up with what's happening regarding the elections or anything else for that matter, because the plans that the government has to try to hold the elections, on how they're going to hold the elections, are being changed on a daily basis. Most recent rather are that they will close all of Iraq's borders for the day before, the day of, and the day after the elections. All mobile and satellite phone services will be cut for those 3 days. They will try to prevent travel between the 18 Iraqi governorates, and they will be limiting all civilian car traffic, not letting it anywhere near any of the 5,000 polling stations that they're trying to set up around the country.
Now, this morning has been a particularly bad time with three car bombings and violence throughout the area of the Green Zone. This is one of the prime targets. Unfortunately, you have been in and around that area. Describe what you're seeing.
Well, it's extremely intense, and in five bombs so far today, And I've also heard the Green Zone being attacked by mortars, which is also not too far from my hotel. Sirens are regularly blaring across the streets of Baghdad as Iraqi police and ambulances travel to the scene of where there have been casualties, whether it be from car bombs or flashes, because amongst this backdrop of the car bombs is ongoing clashes. Even just yesterday in Fallujah, three more Marines were killed. There is heavy fighting in Ramadi and Samarra and Mosul on a daily basis, as well as Bakuba, Beji, and Qayyum, and many other cities around Iraq. So it's extremely tense. Everyone knows this could have only worsened in the lead-up to the elections. Even the Iraqi ministry now announced that they are taking extra measures now to prepare on how to deal with the high number of casualties that they're expecting around the time of the elections as that draws closer.
Dar, you've been talking with Iraqis. Give us an update on just the things they've been saying. I know that it's not a matter of being against democracy. Americans are hearing so much about that word, democracy, and how these elections are going to provide it. But what is this election really about for the Iraqi people?
Well, it's really a complex situation, and it depends on who I speak with. Of course, the Shia, who are followers of Sistani, who is the most revered Shia cleric in all of Iraq, will be voting because he is, in essence, he has issued a fatwa which basically instructs his people to vote or they will go to hell. So, of course, most of these people will be voting. They say they will vote no matter what, no matter how bad the violence is, even though it's a risk to their life. They realize the importance of this for the Shia to finally get legitimate representation in some sort of new government. But most of the other people of Iraq, even many of the Kurds, and particularly the Sunnis, will be boycotting the election. They feel like it's 100% illegitimate, that until the U.S. does put down a firm timetable of when they will begin to withdraw their troops, they cannot have a legitimate election here since they're occupied, which I feel is a very good point. And these people are vehemently against the election. They will not be voting. And many of the attacks we're seeing, it's difficult to say for sure how many are related to the Iraqi resistance and how many are actually terrorist groups who have infiltrated Iraq's borders and are coming here simply to fight against the Western forces that occupy the country.
We've seen divisions in neighboring Turkey having to do with Kurds and others. Describe the divisions between Sunni, Shiite, Christians. Talk about whether or not these divisions have been exaggerated by these processes involving this election.
The divisions have always been there, sitting with the Kurds. They want their own independent federalist state. They are pushing for that. They have been pushing for that. They feel that this is now their time to try to make that happen. So that is occurring. There are very real divisions between the Kurds and the rest of the country as they continue to push for that. But regarding the Sunni and the Shia, there have never been actually divisions between the people. There's always been some political tension and a little bit of tension is regarding their slight difference in beliefs of Islam, but there's never been talk of civil war amongst them. I've been talking to many, many Iraqis about this lately because I'm very well aware that the Western media is making it look like there are these giant divisions and civil wars coming, and that simply couldn't be further from the truth because the people themselves, the Iraqis, it's very mixed between the Sunni and the Shia. Iraq is predominantly, it's a tribal structure here, and many of the tribes are both Sunni and Shia, and even many of my friends, for example, one in particular, he's a Sunni and his wife's a Shia. This is extremely common here, so the thought of them engaging in some sort of civil war between Sunni and Shia seems very hard to imagine, and many of them even now feel like it's not a possibility, but they do acknowledge that there are divisions now being created by the politicians, by the Western media, and by the occupation forces, and they feel that there is this push going on, but be that as it may, they still don't see any type of civil war coming on the horizon.
We have very similar difficulties developing in both America and Iraq when it comes to the election. There are questions about who will be working at the polls, how well they will be trained, whether or not there will be enough information provided to Iraqis so that they will know how to vote and where to vote. And there are ballot questions. There are questions of what will happen in what is basically the equivalent of Iraq's Electoral College. Just talk a little bit about these questions and how remarkably similar they are becoming.
Well, it's extremely complex over here, and even us journalists have a difficult time of figuring out the crazy system that's set up. It's 100% illegitimate from the start. For example, as I mentioned earlier, even the Higher Commission on Elections in Iraq has said they will not be releasing the names of candidates. People will simply be voting for parties, not knowing who, maybe having an idea, but not knowing for sure who will be represented. Therefore, they do not know who they will be voting for election. That names will not be released because they will be immediate targets of assassination. And people will be voting for parties. There are parties who have joined in to form coalitions, if you will, in these lists that will be on the ballot. And there are at least 250 different coalitions of parties now on these lists that people will be trying to vote for. So it's a very confusing situation. And then we look at the violence and the chaos and the targeting of the polling stations and the fact that people will literally be risking their lives simply to go try to vote. It's a system, it's a very confusing system, completely mired in chaos, and it will be an illegitimate election since we're going to have minimum 30 or 40% of people in Iraq not voting for various reasons.
During various times over 2004, there was a discussion in America and other places about pulling out of Iraq, whether or not this was a good idea for the Iraqi people. What are some of the main issues on the minds of Iraqis as they prepare to try to vote January 30th on schedule, on this taxing schedule imposed by America?
That's very easy. The three main concerns for Iraqis are: one, security; two, electricity; and three, gasoline. And then four would probably be jobs, of course, with 70% unemployment here. But security, electricity, gas, these are the things we hear over and over, and people are simply struggling to survive. That's another reason why the election seems a bit of a farce, because people, 70% unemployment, we have the better parts of Baghdad. Iraqis have 5 to 6 hours of electricity per day, and this usually looks like, and then in other parts of Baghdad, they have either no or maybe 1 hour of electricity per day. There are generators running in the background as I speak to you now. And then the fact that there's this massive gasoline crisis, that people are waiting 1 to 2 days just to fill their cars with gasoline that is now more expensive than it ever has been. So these are people's primary concerns, that the election is receiving all of this media. Overall, the Iraqi people are simply struggling to get by on a daily basis. And will having this so-called election provide jobs? Will it provide more gasoline, repaired infrastructure, and electricity, of course? It looks like that will be the case. So all of this media attention on this election for so-called democracy, it seems quite irrelevant to me, because the fact that this election, that this is simply to elect a temporary parliament whose job will be to author a constitution, which will then be voted on in a referendum in October, and then that theoretically will be followed within 2 months by a real election that will elect a real government. So even calling this an election is a bit of a misnomer at this point.
Farid Ayar, he is the Iraqi Independent Electoral Commissioner, has explained that 7 or 8 million of 14 million eligible Iraqi voters will vote on January 30th. Do you think that that is a realistic prediction?
Well, that he says there are 14 million eligible Iraqi voters is correct, but how can that possibly be an accurate estimate when we have at least 90% of the Shia, which is approximately 40% of the population, have already said they will be boycotting the election 100%. We have the followers of Shia cleric Muqtada al-Sadr, which are millions of people who will possibly be boycotting. And then we have a large percentage of Iraqis who will not be voting. They're not willing to risk their lives on this. It's sure to be filled with mass bloodshed.
So again, he's saying roughly 50%, 7 or 8 million out of 14 million eligible voters will vote.
That is a very, very radical estimate on his part, because if we just simply look at the numbers, we take of those eligible voters just being Sunni, who will definitely be boycotting. Maybe a few Sunni will vote, but at least 90% of them will be boycotting. And then we take the security issue into the equation, and then the Kurds and the other. Already we're looking at drastically below 50%. In fact, most even of the nations I spoke to estimate, best case, 30%.
Dar, 30% possibly voting in the elections January 30th, but will they understand the process? How much do Iraqis know? You've said that they're not getting information about the candidates. Do they understand the process that will take place afterward involving the electors who will take the votes and then translate that into representative government?
Actually, I think they do. I think they have a much better understanding of this whole confusing process than even much of the Western media who are reporting on it, which is the great irony. And they do understand that, but the news that we do get showing Iraqis being happy about it is predominantly focused on the Shia, who do fully intend to vote because they do want representation in this temporary parliament. Even though it is temporary, they are very excited about it. They will vote, and because they simply have the most to gain, where the other parties, or the other, for example, the Sunni and the Kurds to some extent, don't have near as much to gain from this upcoming poll as the Shia do. So that's why the media is solely focusing on that aspect, and they're not focusing on the absolute horrendous state that most of the country of Iraq is currently under, and the fact that this election, while it will make some of the Shias temporarily happy, it's not going to change the situation on the ground in Iraq, which is worsening on a daily basis.
Do you have any information available on what type of voting, what types of ballots the Iraqi people will be able to use?
Well, they will be using paper ballots, and they're very long. They have, of course, so many lists of political parties and coalitions of political parties on them. They will then choose simply which coalition of political parties they will vote for. These registration forms were handed out with the monthly food rations, and then there are other stores where they distribute these food rations, where people would then go to pick up their voter registration and along with their food ration. So it is a confusing ballot, and they will be taking these ballots to polling stations. Many of these locations have yet to be announced, much like the candidates' names, because they know once they announce locations, they will be bombed, as they already have, from resistance fighters seeing that they were being, schools, for example, being set up as polling stations. And then after Iraqis vote, all of the ballots will be taken to Amman, Jordan, to be counted, so they won't even be counted inside Iraq. This is another thing that is actually causing many Iraqis to question the legitimacy of this upcoming poll.
Iraqis who were either born in Iraq or whose parent, their father, was born in Iraq, are going to be able to vote in the following countries: Australia, Britain, Canada, Denmark, France, Germany, Iran, Jordan, the Netherlands, Sweden, Syria, Turkey, the United Arab Emirates, and the U.S. That's a lot of opportunity for various kinds of problems. How are those people voting, if you know? And what kinds of system will there be in place to combine the votes from abroad and in Iraq?
Honestly, I have not looked into that much, so I really can't comment on that process and how it will function and what system is set in place to handle that, because it does seem confusing as to how all of those are related fairly in a way that does not allow for any meddling or number crunching, if you will, so to be of concern. But I will around feelings about this, that so many of these people in the countries you just mentioned, while they may have Iraqi citizenship, many of them have never even been to Iraq, or if, on the other hand, maybe they are exiles who have been living out the country for decades. And many of the Iraqis I've spoken with in the last week are very, they have very strong feelings about this, because they feel, why should these people be allowed to vote in an election that could potentially have effects on our lives here in Iraq? We're the people who have suffered through the wars and the dictatorship, and we should be the people who decide what's going to happen here, not people living overseas. And they view these people with anger and resentment at times, because they view them along with politicians such as Ayad Alawi, who came in on the heels of the invaders, and Ahmed Chalabi, who are now in these seats of power, possibly even about to get more power, and people here are just simply not happy about it.
Now, there has been some talk of Sistani walking away with some power from this election. Do you think that's a possibility from what you've heard and read, or do you think that that is kind of wishful thinking on the part of a lot of Iraqis?
Well, Sistani himself, of course, will not be on the ballot. He will have representatives on the ballot, and if this were to be a legitimate election, these people would definitely come away with the majority of the power in the parliament that will be elected. But, however, one thing to keep in mind about this is that one of the things he will do is he will call for a immediate withdrawal of occupation forces, or if not an immediate withdrawal, at least an immediate timetable from them to start pulling out. And then the other, even more important thing, is he wants to construct a theocracy, an Islamic theocracy in Iraq. And this is something that the U.S. government is 100% against. Sistani himself was born in Iran, and his goal is essentially to create, to turn Iraq into a state much like Iran. And is this something that the U.S. government would allow? Definitely not. So I think we need to keep this in mind as far as the majority of the people here who will be voting for representatives of Sistani, and what will happen if they do not get the representation and the power after this that they're hoping for. It's going to be a very interesting thing to watch.
In the U.S., there has been a crisis of counting in various states, Ohio, Florida, New Mexico, Maryland, and this amounts to basically the problem of which votes get counted, you know, who is an eligible voter and what kinds of provisional ballots will be allowed and so on. In Iraq, do you know how they are going to prevent people from voting more than once? Do you know how voter registration has gone thus far?
Actually, that's a good point, and there is already fraud in the works. In fact, people who are not voting are taking their ballots and throwing them on the streets. So it is possible to buy a ballot on the street. Another interesting thing about the ballots, which I neglected to mention earlier, is there is no male or female box for people to check. There is only a male box. And these ballots are being sold on the street. We have at least 90% of the Sunnis, as I said, not participating. And at 70% unemployment, of course, people are more than happy to sell their ballots on the street, or they're just throwing them away. So it's already we have that issue coming into play, where there will be people voting more than once, possibly many, many more times than once. And then as far as how they will be counted, the Iraqi government has been very secretive about how this will be done, what is the table, when will the results come back, and especially the fact that it will be done out of the country. There are already so numerous factors in play that are painting this to be an illegitimate election even before it occurs.
Suppose a number of well-organized voters do vote and they wind up voting for the candidates that would naturally favor the U.S. and favor Alawi and others there in favor with the U.S. Suppose there is a percentage that do vote, and at that point, America decides to go ahead and certify this election.
I'm going to be very surprised if the interim prime minister, Alawi, who is an extremely close ties with the U.S. and is literally doing everything they ask him to do in Iraq, if he does not remain in power, I will be very, very surprised. And then that begs the question, as I mentioned earlier, what will all of the majority of people who will, in fact, be voting for representatives of Grand Ayatollah Sistani, what will they do? Because it will be very clear to them that this was not a legitimate election, that they are very well aware of the fact that they have the numbers, and by attending this poll on the 30th, they will get more power. So what will happen when that does not happen? Because then, if he remains in power, of course, he will not be calling for a withdrawal of the occupation forces, whereas if the representatives of Sistani are in power, they will be calling for a timetable of that withdrawal. So this will be a very interesting thing, because the elections are, I view them much like the so-called handover of power, which occurred on June 28th of last year. It's simply another benchmark that the occupying forces, the U.S. government, in fact, is using to pull over, to distance themselves from this occupation, which has turned into a complete catastrophe. And these elections will not change the facts on the ground here, that this 100% stabilized, completely shattered. And electing yet another interim type of parliament is really not going to do anything to improve the situation on the ground.
Condoleezza Rice, the Turkish press anyway, pointed out that she has vowed to repair damaged relations with American allies and to work toward what she calls diplomacy. There is talk, Seymour Hersh has written about the possibility of more preemptive strikes possibly in Iran. So it's almost as if people in America watching politics are seeing this group of people that took America into Iraq break off, if you will, from the whole discussion that's going on in the world. And they're kind of in a reality of their own. I mean, the diplomacy she's talking about is certainly not with the people of Iraq or their representatives. She's talking about diplomacy with nations that America wants to work with as allies, both in terms of economics and these various kinds of challenges to governments like the one in Iran. I don't know, what are your thoughts on that intense political process going on in the States?
Well, Condoleezza Rice was one of the leading hawks for the invasion of Iraq. Of course, despite her propaganda-ish talk of wanting to mend bridges and practice diplomacy and saying that the time for diplomacy is now, this would be a radical departure from their policy, essentially aggressive military force to get what they want and acting unilaterally. And this will not change despite this rhetoric of her saying this. If we recall, when Mr. Bush won the so-called election in the U.S., he said the same thing. He said, yes, we look to work more with our European allies and try to mend some of these have taken some hits over the last years. And now look at where we're at with his aggressive policies. Nothing has changed. He has used his so-called re-election to basically have a bombs-away attitude in Iraq, because Fallujah followed, the siege of Fallujah began November 2nd and is ongoing to this day. Now we have heavy-handed policies in Mosul, Ramadi, Samarra, even in parts, and it seems to only be increasing. So Lisa Rice saying that she is going to practice more diplomacy, it's really difficult for me to imagine. And I think what will be very important for people to watch is if the U.S. and or Israel, given the green light by the U.S., does not attack Syria or Iran in the next 4 years, I will be very, very shocked. My prediction is we will have bombed or invaded one or of those countries before the next 4 years is over. And Condoleezza Rice will be using her new position of power as Secretary of State to basically give a green light for this to happen.
Darj Mail is an independent journalist from Alaska. He's been reporting from Iraq for Free Speech Radio News, Flashpoints, and the BBC. His articles are published in New Standard News, Common Dreams, The Nation Online, Alternet, and many other publications. You can read his daily dispatches home from Iraq at darjmailiraq.com, darjamailiraq.com. I'm Dori Smith. You've been listening to The Crisis Vote. This program was produced in the studios of listener-supported WHUS Stores, radio for the people at the University of Connecticut. For further information on this program, write to me at theshockvote@yahoo.com. The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its management, or the University of Connecticut.